I'm Steve Skinner with Stacy Stein.
Good morning. We are joined on the line by Dr. Verna Little. She's responsible for the administration and delivery of behavioral health, community and grant-funded programs in 26 federally qualified health centers throughout New York City and New York State's Hudson Valley region. Dr. Little is also responsible for many of the services the organization provides to the uninsured, including pharmacy and specialty care. She's responsible for the administrative and clinical oversight of almost 200 staff members. Dr. Little, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be a part of your program this morning.
We wanted to talk to you about mental health issues facing healthcare workers who are working with COVID-19 patients.
So, yeah, I think it has been tremendously stressful for our frontline healthcare workers. And one of the things we know, and it's not often talked about, is that healthcare workers have some of the highest suicide rates. If you look at rates among physicians or other providers, there was something recently a couple years ago that really drew attention to nurse suicide and how stress and burnout contributed. And I think what we're seeing now is as they struggle with both working with patients and systems that are strained, and then experiencing, you know, their own personal situations where they have children home from school or spouses who may not be employed or other, you know, COVID-related stressors, I think that is really going to take a noticeable toll on our healthcare workers.
Dr. Little, this is going to come as a surprise to some people who, when they do encounter nurses in their day-to-day life, if they go to the doctor or even to the hospital, nurses are always often very positive, very helpful, very healing. You don't think of a nurse as being a suicidal person or an occupation.
Yeah, and I think people are surprised when they hear it. When, you know, you think about who nurses are people who go into the profession because they do care about people and they want to help. And I think we often don't really remember that they are, you know, frontline facing with patients, which is often very difficult and very hard. And then also have to work with providers, you know, physicians and other providers and other people in the system. So they're often the people between those two worlds, and then also have to manage in healthcare, which is difficult now as well. And so I think we forget that they're really sort of the people who get it from all sides and can always appreciate how caring and giving they are when we experience them.
How is the situation different in New York, which is the epicenter of the epidemic, as opposed to, well, where we are? Our county has no deaths yet. We've only had 5 confirmed cases, and we have no deaths. It may be hard for some of the people that are our listeners here to picture the absolute chaos that can happen when your hospital's overrun with cases.
Yeah, you know, and I think that has certainly been challenging for all of New Yorkers and particularly people in the city. I think one of the things I found over the years is that people in healthcare in general and people in healthcare in New York City, when it comes time to rally together and to be resourceful, whether it's in the time of a hurricane or a pandemic or, you know, another crisis, they certainly, you know, are able to do that and come together. And I think that's what we've seen.
Dr. Little, how do you help the nurses and practitioners in your area in particular, especially right now?
So I think one piece is really being supportive and understanding the kind of stress that people are under. And I think more than ever, you know, really understanding that it's important to take into consideration what personal challenges people may be experiencing. You know, does your organization have an employee assistance program? And if they don't, do you have support lines or information on bulletin boards? You know, are you taking a survey and knowing what people are struggling and don't have childcare so that you might be able to, you know, have people come together and share positions or offer some flexible hours? You know, so I think it's really important to understand that people are being faced with stressors that they have not had to in the past. and really take that into consideration. So I think as an employer, as a provider, you know, as someone in the healthcare community, you need to really take those pieces into consideration.
Dr. Little, it seems like there are some resources that are coming online for nurses and providers. The Colorado Nurses Association is holding a virtual support group that happens, I forget, it's either like weekly or monthly. And then you also just taught a webinar through the Association for Clinicians of the Underserved on preventing suicide. What's the participation been like? Like how keen are nurses and providers on reaching out for help right now?
So I think one of the things we saw with the webinar was we had a lot of employers and healthcare organization systems people join. And I think that was wonderful to see because it means that they're starting to think about how they need to respond and address the needs that their providers and their employees are experiencing. I think it's super important to really give people the time to participate, as well as remind them and remember that people now, particularly if they're trying to manage, you know, increased caseloads and increased patients, that we need to bring the resources to them that may they may not have the time to attend a webinar or support call. And if that doesn't work for them and we're not able to give them the time to do it and support that effort, what else can we do? Can we give them information on a number that they can call off hours? Can we provide them with some self-care literature? Can we put something, you know, out on our computer messages every day that might be helpful for people? You know, what are some of the things that we are able to do to make sure that we're reaching everyone?
Dr. Little, you hear of nurses having really long shifts and really difficult hours a lot of times, and that's probably, you know, one of the reasons, like you said, it you're not getting as much participation as you might in your programs. But is that also one of the main stressors? And what are the other main stressors, especially in New York? Is it a lack of PPE? Is it just stress of seeing people, so many people die? What are the main stressors that are affecting healthcare practitioners in New York?
You know, I think one of the things that we're seeing, you know, again, are people who are having to deal with patients who are ill and who, and then also having personal tragedies. So, you know, the organization, I've actually transitioned and work with an organization now, and we have providers, small providers in New York City that have small practices. And one of the providers, you know, literally had to close her office because all of her employees were not well. And her husband was hospitalized, and another one who was practicing and her and lost her husband. You know, so I think that it has been incredibly challenging for people to continue, you know, to work and care for patients and be experiencing loss and illness in their personal lives.
We're talking to Dr. Verna Little, a behavioral health specialist in New York City. Dr. Little, what are some ways that community members can support healthcare providers? And just kind of how can we acknowledge the stresses of our nurses and providers?
So I think there's a couple of ways, and I think some of the local businesses who have supported their healthcare organizations and, you know, the smaller providers with donations of masks and food have been incredibly helpful. I would also encourage people, you know, to not forget the smaller practices. Sometimes we think about the hospitals and, you know, some of the larger, but a majority of, you know, healthcare practices in the United States are small practices that are one, two, or, you know, three primary care provider practices. And often we forget about them, and they tend to be on the front lines. And they also tend to play a very different role in terms of the kinds of relationships that they have with patients in the community. So, you know, don't forget those practices as well as you're thinking about support.
And Dr. Little, I know this is kind of a low-hanging fruit and maybe an obvious question, but there are soldiers, there are police, there are nurses. There are first responders, and they sign up for this work. Are they not trained to handle the emotional toll that comes at them as a part of this work?
So I would say I would love to answer that question, yes. Unfortunately, we did a project not that long ago where we talked to over 1,500 primary care providers and their teams, and many of them, almost half of them, said they never got any training around suicide in their training programs at all. And certainly no one had talked to them about their own health and well-being and their own risk for suicide and what to do and what resources were out there. So one of the things that I think we need to really look at is training those first responders not only how to care for someone and respond to someone who's at risk for suicide, but to actually address, their own suicide risk and provide resources and information. And I think we need to really do a much better job of helping people in training learn skills and develop some coping mechanisms for managing the stress and really preparing them. And I think we haven't done a good job in many programs traditionally.
And what are some of those coping mechanisms that you would prefer to see as part of the training?
So I can give an example, as we're thinking about mental health providers, one of the pieces that we often talk about is really being prepared to care for the individuals that you're caring for who often come in with multiple mental health conditions and multiple psychosocial, social determinant stressors, and really training them to be able to care for individuals so that they don't feel overwhelmed. They can have some professional competence in it. It sort of helps them reduce some of the burnout. Also giving people some power to be able to manage their schedules and be able to maybe pick flexible hours or do job sharing so that they're not managing some of the personal stressors and have a little bit of ability to have some control in their professional lives.
I'm curious whether the amount of nurses that are available and in the profession in general is one of the main stressors. When you don't have enough nurses, then you're working longer shifts and you're being asked to do a lot more. Are we getting enough nurses trained and brought into the healthcare system, or is that something that we need to look at? Kind of like teachers, where they don't really make enough to make a living, but they still have to deal with all that bureaucracy and all the different issues that come as part of being a teacher. You've got to really be dedicated to be a teacher because you're not going to get paid and you're going to have to deal with state and federal bureaucracy.
Right. I think one of the things to be able to do, and there's some great programs that do this, AHEC, I think you have one in your state, the Area Health Education Centers, and others that go into high schools and even into elementary schools and talk to people about health professions and what the opportunities are. And the programs that help, medical assistants, as an example, then continue their education while they're on the job to be able to get nursing degrees and be able to advance, or nurses to be able to advance into being nurse practitioners or, and so I think really encouraging those kinds of on-the-job training programs. Programs so that people have the opportunities and that we can start to fill some of the shortages with people who are already in the field, committed to the field, and create a pipeline for them in a doable way and in a way that's employer supported or funded and can help us meet the shortages and maybe even expand, the National Health Service Corps so that we can increase the number of professionals, medical, dental, mental health that are going into underserved communities.
Dr. Little, is there anything else you'd like to share with us this morning?
I really want to thank you for your time, and I really want to thank you for bringing attention to the folks that are out, doing the work each day, and thank you.
Thank you so much for what you're doing as well, Dr. Little.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.